Hello and welcome back to the Stop Stressing Me Out podcast. This week on our series all about workplace wellness and stress management in the workplace, I wanted to talk a little bit about the stress of even getting into the workplace to begin with. Yep, you've guessed it. It's the dreaded job hunting process. I can already like feel it through the microphone. Many of you who either are currently going through it, have recently been through it, have the trauma of having job hunted in the last 5 to 10 years, you know what I'm talking about. It can be a soul-crushing, painful process to find your next gig, right? To find the next opportunity that hopefully will be something that aligns with your values, helps you grow, helps you learn more about what you want to do in your desired field, lets you share your talents, and pays you a living wage, if not much more, right? This is an incredibly stressful process. And it had me thinking about my favorite career coach over on Instagram. So Darcy Smith is not just the owner of an incredible Instagram account called Career Coach Darcy, where she shares tips on interview prep, resume, negotiation tips, but she's also the owner of a finance recruiting firm called Rocklin. She does one-on-one coaching for job hunts. She has courses on resume writing and interview prep, negotiation, all of that good stuff. She has incredible free resources on her website as well on like how to do your LinkedIn reach out. And her newsletter is just chock full of phenomenal tips. So I thought there's absolutely no person better to have this conversation today. So in our conversation, Darcy and I talk a little bit about, first of all, like what is the high level overview of the current job market? You know, what's the reality for job seekers nowadays? Where are they going to have success? We also talk about what it means to work with a recruiter. Like, how do you know when you're working with a good recruiter versus an average recruiter? We talk a lot about the clarity that you really need to find when and how to make those trade-offs in the job hunts, right? I think in my intro, I talked about we want to find the job that has this, 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 and this. And, you know, unfortunately, it's very rare that we're going to get absolutely everything we want. And Darcy really helps us walk through how to figure out what are those non-negotiables and how to help you get clarity in that process. We talk a little bit about how to keep your spirits up and maintain momentum in that job hunting process. I think a lot of us have seen those horror stories of, you know, the hundreds of applications in order to get 2 interviews. Like, it can be a very stressful process. So we talk about how to take care of yourself. We also go through what I like to call a little bit of job hunting myth busting. And these were a lot of aha moments that I personally gleaned from her Instagram account. Those tips like, oh, can you actually change your job title on a resume? Well, let's find out. You know, best size of resume to have, how to describe gaps in your resume, ChatGPT, and so, so much more. And if you're like, hey, I'm not currently job hunting, but I'm really curious about how to navigate the internal job hunt, internal job moves, well, we talk about that as well. So without further ado, let's head straight into the interview with Darcy Smith. Well, thank you so much, Darcy, for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I have to start with a question that we ask all of our guests. What is stressing you out today, this week?
What's not? No. What is stressing me out? I think my biggest thing this week has been like motivation. Mm-hmm. It's been a little gloomy here and kind of one of those things where I work from home and I work for myself. So getting up every day and kind of like sticking to a routine, and I stress myself out over like feeling like I'm doing enough, because with my own business, it's really hard to like kind of structure that. So for me, it's like understanding what I need to like help myself motivate, or telling myself like it is okay to like take that day off. And maybe that day is just like a part of not having that motivation, is meaning I need to like go on a walk, you know? So I think like that's something I'm just kind of like dealing with right now and trying to figure out like, how can I not let that stress me out so much? But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
You know, it's so funny that you say that, because I've been in the exact same boat this week, and I actually gave myself permission for the next few days, other than this recording, of just like doing nothing for my business. And like, I'm getting some of the projects in around the house that I've been putting off. And it was just that same, like the motivation, the vibe just wasn't there. And I'm like, we're just going to go with that and return on Monday and see how we feel.
I love that. Yeah, that's good. It's so sad that we have to say like giving ourselves permission. Like, it has to feel like this like thing instead of just living the life that we choose that day. Right. But it's true. Like having kind of that, I guess for me, it's a structure thing. And I was always a people pleaser in my work. So it was like, oh, I'm doing it for my boss to make sure that they're happy. Yeah. And so when I don't have that, then I'm like, okay, well, yeah, where's that line of doing something for myself, you know?
Well, and we're millennials, right? We want to be productive. Yeah. So we, you know, identify our value, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I'm hoping for those that don't know who you are, you could start us off with like a rough outline of what your career has looked like and how you are doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously my name's Darcy, but my whole life I grew up like in sports. So my whole goal was get to a Division I school to play sports, like play soccer. That was like my motivation for going to college and doing the thing. I never really had, which is so funny now that I'm a career coach, I never really had the thought of like, what is my career going to be? It was like, go to college, get a degree, and then kind of figure it out. So I went to college basically for soccer, got a degree because that's what you do. And then after I graduated undergrad, I was like, well, I have no idea still what I want to do. So why not go to more school? So I went and got my MBA because I thought that's smart. That should help me get more money or something, right? And ultimately getting my MBA was really like the catalyst for owning my own business and all of these things that I didn't really know in that moment yet. But after I graduated from my MBA, I did end up getting a corporate job. So I worked for a company called Cintas. They do like facility services and they sell like t-shirts and uniforms to companies, like really large companies. And so I did that. It was very corporate, climb the ladder type of role. And I loved it, to be honest. Like I felt very fulfilled in the sense of like I had these goals and things that felt like I was putting things on my resume that were going to like open doors for me in the future and kind of led me down a path of like figuring out what I truly wanted. And then fast forward 2 years, I was kind of realizing like, okay, I'm kind of ready for that next thing, but what does that look like? I had a friend get into recruiting, which I had not know anything about, but she was like, you get to talk to people, kind of match them into jobs. You know, and I was like, that sounds like exactly what I want to be doing, like helping people in their careers. And I think there's a fine line with recruiters, and many people listening might kind of have like maybe bad horror stories with recruiters or great ones, right? But ultimately I wanted to feel that feeling of understanding someone and their personality and being like, oh, I feel like I know exactly like what you might love or the type of manager you'd want to work for. And that's really what led me into recruiting. And I've been in recruiting for 7 years now. And about 3.5 or so years ago, I was working for these two guys. No bad word to say about them. Great people. But I looked at them and I thought, well, if they can run a business, like, so can I. Boys can do it.
That TikTok, right?
Right. If boys can do it. Yeah. That's literally what went through my mind. And I was like, I really think I can do this. Like, I want to take the leap. And I ended up leaving that agency and starting my own recruiting firm and simultaneously using the skills I had in recruiting for over those, you know, 5-6 years of writing resumes and helping people prep for interviews. I started an Instagram and TikTok talking about all of those things and started that career coaching business, which was supposed to be a side hustle, to be honest, and just have some extra cash, like while I was building up my recruiting business. And it ended up becoming something I was so incredibly passionate about. And it ended up becoming like a full-time job for me of building this career coaching business. And so now I kind of do both. And it just kind of depends on the month, right? Like which one I'm doing more of. So the balance kind of switches, but that's kind of the trajectory that led me to career coaching and recruiting.
And that's how I discovered you, was through Instagram. And it was one of these like, oh my God, you have so many juicy aha moments and things that I hadn't considered. And obviously over 100,000 people on Instagram have not necessarily considered. So it's been so helpful for them. And we'll get to that in a minute. But I think one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast is because this season is all about stress in the workplace. And there's so much stress getting into the workplace for people, right? That switching careers, whether you're in a role and you have that feeling of, I need to get out, I need to get out, or whether you've been laid off and you have that feeling of, I need to get in, I need to get in, right? Like it's that kind of like really tense vibe. We're sitting at February 22nd right now. From your perspective, what's like the high level overview of the job market right now? What are job seekers feeling?
Yeah. So my experience, and I always want to start off with this because it's based on who I work with, right? Yeah. Like that's all I can speak to. So I work with hiring managers because of the recruiting business. That's where a lot of my information comes from. And then I work with people that are currently searching for roles or maybe searching for something more in their current job. So whether that's internal or external like positions, right? So of that, it is very industry specific, I will say. Like the tech world is very much up and down right now. We're seeing a lot of layoffs. And I think in terms of the actual job market, in the sense of like applying to jobs, I always ask this question to all of my clients, like, how many jobs are you truly applying for before you're seeing an interview? Because I want people to feel like a little bit of that validation of you're not alone, of, hey, I'm applying to 50 things before I'm getting an interview. That's completely normal. We have switched from, I would say over the past 2 years, we've switched from it being very common to see a job opening, have the skills for it, apply to the job, get a response and feel like, okay, that worked. Like there's a job opening. I apply, I get the response of here's an interview, right? That's the way it should work. We're moving away from that. And it's now becoming, who do you know? You know, it's always been a little bit of that, but now it's everyone I talk to, it's, oh, I ended up getting this job because, you know, a friend's dad or a friend's friend, or I knew someone that went to this company, like because they left my company. So now everyone I'm working with, I've been encouraging them to reach out to people, even if you weren't that close to them, right? Reach out to them, use things like LinkedIn and say, hey, like, I noticed you went to this company, like they left, you know, maybe a company you're at currently. I noticed you went to this company. How are you liking it? Like, do you mind if we have a 10-minute little chat over Zoom so I can hear more about it? And then maybe ask them if there's some openings, like creating those connections and allowing yourself to find other ways in. This is a really long tangent to your very simple question of how's the job market, but really it's hard. I mean, honestly, it's been a lot of applications is what I'm seeing. Like the overall theme is a lot of applications before seeing interviews.
And I feel like I see the same thing on LinkedIn where people are like, I did 200 applications and I got like 5 interviews, and it feels so like secondhand depressing.
Yeah.
While reading the feed. Is it truly just a numbers game? Like have the numbers just swapped and the sort of position of power has shifted, or what's going on?
I will say that, again, it goes back to that industry specific thing. There's a lot of people that were in very general positions. So whether that's like an operations role where you're kind of putting your hands in a lot of things without having that really specific, like laser focused, I am good at this one thing, you kind of get overlooked, even though you're probably an amazing employee. Mm-hmm. But on a resume and an application, if they're looking for someone who has a specialty or is really good at like one specific software or one specific platform, and that's just not your expertise, it's just so hard to get that interview. Because when people are searching, every, you know, the more and more time that goes by, people can get lazier and lazier. Yeah. And what I mean by that is from the side of people looking at resumes, they have to scan so quickly that they're just looking for like that one thing, or maybe that one job title or that one platform that they know the person needs to have. When really you hear about people getting jobs that may not have had all of the things that, you know, were on the application, it's usually because they had a friend there or they knew someone that got them in there. It's not the typical, hey, we're taking a chance on you when we see this application, you know?
Yeah.
So I always encourage people, like, even if you're in a generalist position, like find some sort of like mentorship or shadowing program where you can work on a specific project to gain those skills that at least kind of help you, because you never know what's going to come down the road in like 5 to 6 years. And if you keep getting caught in this kind of cycle of always being the jack of all trades, then you don't get looked at for these positions where they are really laser focused on finding someone with like very specific skill sets.
Yeah. I mean, because the end of the quote, right, is master of none. And so you can see how that's going through people's minds. Yeah, that's really interesting. And the power of an employee referral, hey, like, does that guarantee your resume gets looked at?
It depends on the company. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I remember like back, I would say like probably like 8 years ago or so, I was interested in working at Google, who isn't, right? So I had a friend there and I definitely wasn't qualified for the job, but because of his referral, they had like, it was like a, we at least interview you. So I got the experience to interview. So it really does depend on the position and the job and obviously how large the company is and whatnot. And I would say probably the pull of the person, you know, referring you. Yeah. How high up they are and how connected they are. But typically, you know, you have a much better shot. And I will say, like, from my perspective as a recruiter, there's so many people I've gotten jobs that the managers have even told me, like, this person is amazing. I'm so glad we hired them. We would have never interviewed them if they just submitted their resume. Like, yeah. The only reason we trusted to interview them was because you, like me being the recruiter, Darcy, they were like, you were pushing so hard because you knew them as a person. You knew they would be great at this job. And like, you're advocating for them. So I do encourage people to try to use recruiters when it makes sense. But I also completely understand that there's just so many recruiters out there that are pretty terrible. So I like am very cautious of that. And everyone always asks me, like, how do I find a good recruiter? And it's like, it's a little bit of that, you know, air, what's the word when you like, you just have to go for it and, you know, they might be good or bad, but don't shy away from using a recruiter because of some of the horror stories you've heard. Cause they can really, really help you and can leverage and get you more money and like a lot of things like that.
It sounds like, so I've never used a recruiter before, so I'm coming at this completely blank, but it sounds like you really know your applicants. So how much time do you spend with them to get that good sense in order to advocate properly for them?
Yeah. And this is a great question because this is how a candidate can actually identify a good recruiter or not. How much time are they spending with you? Are they actually asking you questions about you and not just like, okay, do you have X, Y, and Z? Like if they're really transactional and they're just asking you questions on the res, like on your resume, and they're just kind of checking the boxes, that's kind of like in your head, like, okay, this is a little bit of a red flag. Doesn't seem like they truly care about me. They're just like, it, does this person fit into this box of the job? So for me, in my recruiting company, I spend a lot of time with my candidates. I ask them things because ultimately I want to be able to send them to multiple jobs. I don't want them to just be good for one. I'm like, hey, let's talk about like what you actually want to do in the future. And like, what doors is going to open for you? Do you want to work for a small company, a large company? What matters most to you? Is it money? Is it freedom? Is it taking care of your family? Right. Let's understand like, what are your pain points? What are your strengths? And then I can say, okay, this job you're going to love because of X, Y, and Z, because you told me these things. This job, you're probably not going to love the way that they manage, but I think you're going to love the product. So it's like, we kind of go over different things and then they can see it from their perspective of like, okay, I see the pros and cons now. And that's kind of how I, you know, pitch them as well. Like right now, I actually, it's so cool. I have a coaching client that found me on Instagram last year. She had me write her resume. Fast forward a year, I have a job opening with my recruiting company and it's in finance. She's never worked in finance in her life. And I just know that she's amazing, like operationally, and just such a, like, meshes really well with the management team. And so I told her, I was like, hey, I have this job. I don't want to push it on you at all, but here's the information. I just like know your personality is going to match. And I tell them, hey, this person is no one that you would ever interview. They don't have anything on their resume that is anything in finance. And they're like, well, we trust you. Like, we know, you know, your candidates. And so now like they're in final interviews, things are going amazing. They're like, we love her. Like we knew, like we would trust you with whoever you're going to bring us. So someone that I would say, like, to kind of wrap this up, but if you're talking to a recruiter, ask them questions about their client, meaning the employer that they're working for, whether they're internal or external, meaning, right? Like if they're internal, they work for the actual company as a recruiter, or external, like I am, they're like partnering with that company. If they don't know a ton about the company, a ton about the management style, red flag, they should be really close to them and understand their culture and understand like what this company is about and like where you're going to go once you get in there. And that's going to make you feel like, okay, they know what they're talking about. They're not just going to shove this job on me so they can make some money, you know, cause that's like the typical thing of a recruiter. They're actually understanding why I'm a match. Right. And that's kind of what you're looking for.
And it's clarity, right? Like you have clarity on your clients. They have clarity on what they're looking for, hopefully. And that's one of the things you talk a lot about on Instagram, is that when you're looking for figuring out what you want for your next role, making sure you're really clear on that. And as a stress management coach, I like fully agree, you know, clarity in what we want and where we're going, very important. And I think it's also really challenging for folks to find clarity when we maybe have a lot of conflicting priorities, right? Like, I really want this type of job because it's going to give me the flexibility, but it doesn't necessarily bring me the income. I really love this field, but it's not paying me appropriately because, you know, for the needs that I have as a family. So what is your advice for people who are looking to find that clarity, but they have to really manage significant trade-offs maybe during the job hunt process?
Right. The biggest thing is being completely honest with yourself and like what you're willing to give up or what you're willing not to give up. So all of my clients, I have them go through literally a clarity exercise and we talk through like, what is the most important thing to you? What are you not willing to budge on? And sometimes it changes once I start asking questions because they first come to me and say, I don't want to make less than $100,000. I want to make sure that, you know, I have these types of benefits. Like they have all these lists. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, okay, so if the job's fully remote and it's only paying 80,000, you would say no to it because 100,000 is your, you know, and they're like, well, so I'm like, okay, let's break that down. Like what are you considering here? And then we really get down to like, let's be honest with yourself. Freedom is more important to you because let's talk about what if the job was $200,000, but you had to be in the office every day. And then they're like, oh, like, I didn't really think about it like that. Right. So it's like asking yourself these questions to really, really be honest and say, what is that number one thing or what is the most important thing to me? And let that kind of be a guiding light rather for you. And that's the something you can't budge on. Right. It's kind of like dating. It's like you have your checklist of like who you want to date and like what they're going to have. But at the end of the day, you start to kind of like, as you're, you know, out there dating, you're like, okay, what are some things that I can kind of like maybe deal with or understand, because not everyone's perfect, you know. It's the same thing, not every job's perfect, so you kind of have to start, you know, making that list and then understanding what things you're not willing to take off that list as you're going through. And that's really like where that clarity comes from. And then being honest with yourself, in like, some people want to climb that ladder, some people want to get into leadership, some people, like, I think societally you're expected to like constantly be moving up. But if you really ask yourself what's important to you, some people say like, actually, I just want a stable job. I'm okay with being in the same role for a very long time. If it pays me well, I can support my family. I'm very happy. I have flexibility to take my kid to the doctor when I need to, like things like that, right? Like I don't need to keep like pushing myself to get to that next level every like year, every 2 years. And that's completely fine. Like find the thing that makes you happy and that works for you. And that's where that clarity comes in of like, once you decide what you want, then you can go out. But I think where we take it's a misstep is immediately we start thinking, I need a new job. And we just start applying without really taking at least like a day, literally a day, to just kind of like break down really like what you want. And then let that guide you into how you're going to apply and like what your job search strategy is going to look like.
And I mean, not a lot of great things come from panic mode, right?
Yeah.
It's so difficult. And if you're in that situation or your runway is running out, to start to feel like you get to have, you get to be selective in what you do. It really, I mean, there's so many things it depends on, but I love what you're saying about like pick that one non-negotiable. And I think also for people to realize being open-minded isn't necessarily a bad thing. It can really surprise you. Like, I think one of my first roles was in oil and gas, and I would never have gone out and said, I want to work in oil and gas, but the role that it led me to kicked off my career, and I would never have found that role otherwise. Like, I would never have been exposed to it. Mm-hmm. And so that open-mindedness, you know, again, I think just can lead us down some interesting paths that is not necessarily in our career, our vision of our career path.
Yeah. I love to talk about this, like the industry thing. Of course, it's great to like have a passion and want to work in something, right? Like people always say like, you know, the dream job thing. I personally don't believe in a dream job, and I can tangent about that for weeks. But my point is I believe in a job that gives you all the things on that checklist so you can live your dream in your own life. Like, I don't want your dream to be your job. I want your life to be your dream, right? Like doing the things that you want to do because this job pays you the ability to spend time with your family, the ability to go travel, the ability to buy a motorcycle, like whatever you want that makes you happy, right? And that doesn't mean you have to work in this perfect, I have to work because I love animals, I have to be a vet, right? And that's kind of how we were taught when we were growing up. It's like, oh, what do you love? Like, let's talk about career day. Like, you know, you want to be a veterinarian because you love animals. That was like my thought. I was going to be a famous soccer player because I love soccer, right? Like there was no other thought process. And then once I got into recruiting, I'm helping people get these jobs. And I tell them, I'm like, it's so much about the people. Like, yeah, if you like the people that you're surrounded with, it doesn't really matter what you're doing. You know, there's a little bit, of course, but like, if you're working for a construction company, or like you said, oil and gas, like if you're surrounded by the right people and you feel fulfilled in those ways, like doesn't really matter. Like as long as the company is like, you know, morality and those types of things are aligned, yeah. then that's important. But in terms of like, I have friends that were like, I never thought I was going to work in construction. And now look at me, like I'm out like on these construction sites selling roofing products and I'm having the time of my life. And I love the people I work with. I love my clients. And I'm like, that's so awesome. Like, that's all you can like dream about, right? Like that's the dream. So yeah, I, again, could tangent on that forever, yeah. but I totally agree.
Well, and it's funny, I believed in the dream job until I got the dream job. And then I was like, oh, this is not for me anymore. Or, you know, yeah. Anyways, that's a story for another day.
Yeah.
We were talking a little bit about like the, you know, secondhand horror of LinkedIn layoffs and job hunting and what people are talking about the number of interviews or applications or the whole process to getting a job. So much of it feels really disheartening. And it's very hard for people to pick themselves up after ghosting or rejection or that kind of thing. So how do you suggest people keep their spirits up and maintain that momentum in the process? Because you have to bring that energy to each interview, and it's very hard to do that, or to each, like you're saying, to not get lazy with the way that you're crafting your resume. So how do you encourage them to keep that energy up?
Right. The number one thing is everyone's different. So unfortunately, I can't give like a blanket advice thing here, because I think first you have to know yourself. Are you the type of person that needs to track the jobs that you're applying to and look back and feel kind of like those check marks of like, have you followed up? Have you done all the things, right? Are you the type of person that needs to apply and completely forget about it? And if then you get an email that says you got an interview, yay, that's exciting. Or if you never hear from them, you don't have to worry about it, you know?
Yeah.
So know yourself and like how you want to apply. And at the same time, like, what does that mean in terms of the interview process? I think in order to have that like excitement still there, you have to kind of celebrate the smaller wins. And people have probably heard that before, but I mean, just getting an interview and getting that opportunity to speak with someone, you never know where that may go in the future. So like, there's so many times when you interview somewhere, it doesn't work out. That person might know someone else that you might be a really great fit for. So like, if you keep these positive things in your mind, it's really going to help you on this, you know, what we call kind of that hamster wheel of applying to jobs. Look at everything like not a bad like opportunity. Every like interaction you have, every person you meet, everything that you do is for a reason, whether you see it now or in 10 years from now. And that's really, really helped my clients, because they're like, sometimes I just kind of get down on myself. Like, what am I doing this all for? Like, I'm not getting the offers that I want and those things. And I'm like, well, who have you met? Like, what was exciting about that interview? What did you learn about it? And then they start like getting excited to talk about it. And so that's been a nice motivator to kind of think about what positives have come out of that. And that kind of can like help keep them going.
Yeah. It's like the gratitude or the, you know, taking away those without being toxic positivity, right? Like, we don't want that, but pulling out the things you can learn, the things you can get curious about, or that type of thing. Mm-hmm. No, I love the know yourself piece, because yeah, we're all different in that aspect. I think I said this to you on an earlier call that we had together, but I had seen this interview with Bryce Dallas Howard, where she was talking about how someone had told her in acting that like it takes 68 auditions to get a callback. And so she didn't take it personally. She just started counting, and that worked for her. I was like, if I had to count to 68, I would be like,
yeah,
sweet Jesus. Like, you know, so everybody's just so different in that process.
Yeah. See, my reaction to that is, oh, well, I'm going to do it in like 3. But like, that's not, you know what I mean? And then if I don't, like, I just wouldn't care, but I'd be like, oh, that's a challenge for me. But that's my brain, right? Like,
yeah,
that's how I motivate. And that is not everyone. So how, there's not one way that works. And I have so many people that come to me, they're like, oh, I have this like Google sheet. I've been tracking all of my applications. I've been following up. I'm like, you just telling me this sounds draining. I'm like, do you like that? And they're like, no, I hate it. I'm like, then why are you doing it?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, like I thought I'm supposed to be. I'm like, there's no rule. Like, it's whatever is makes you happy. You have to lead with, like, this is like my whole motto is like, you have to lead with fun. And there's things that you're doing in life that just are not fun, but like, how can you make them a little bit more fun versus just every day when you sit down and you go to apply, if you're in that headspace of draining and this is terrible, I don't want to be here. Like, it's just not going to work. Right. Like, you can't sit down with that feeling. So how can we get out of that and like move into like a little bit more of happy, fun, positive, right? However we can do that, let's figure it out, because yeah, each person's different. So you just got to figure out what works for you.
Well, and the value of self-care throughout that job hunting process, right? You need it so much more than ever. Oh, like, what are you encouraging your clients to do to take care of themselves outside of the job hunting process?
Well, it depends too of like, again, what type of person are you? Are you someone that wants to spend 2 days out of the week and maybe you spend 3, 4 hours a day? Like, you just want to get it done with and then like forget about it, right? And then, or are you like, you know what? I want to break it up and spend 30 minutes a day, every single day. All I have to do is this 30 minutes and I feel like that's an accomplishment, right? And then I think so many of us wait until the weekend to like do something or plan something. It's like the week is this like long draining thing. Oh, we got to Friday. Let's like now we can have fun. So like I really do encourage, like, even if it's as simple as just like taking some time to yourself to whatever, it's like make dinner or like go to dinner by yourself or go on a walk, go on a picnic with a friend after work. Like there's still time after work, you know, like not all the time because maybe you have to work, but like doing things in the weekday is, I think, needs to be more normalized because we've gotten to this culture of like work, 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 and then have fun on the weekends, you know, or on your off days. And I'm like, yeah, still enjoy things, you know, on the days that you work, you know, obviously within reason, because obviously people are tired. But yeah, I definitely encourage like doing that or taking the break and like stepping away from the chaos that is whatever's that thing that's draining you. You got to step away from it for a second. And it's okay. Like, to take 5, 6 days off of applying. Like, it's not going anywhere, right? So, and again, everyone's in a different position and feeling those stressors a lot more. Some people like may not have a job currently and they need to find that job, you know? And so I think, but again, like coming at it from a point of feeling really stressed and feeling really drained, like it's just not going to make it any easier. So you have to be able to take those breaks and kind of look at it from a different perspective.
Have you seen the Instagram or TikTok of that girl who goes to do something fun at the end of every day?
No, but that sounds great.
I'll link it in the show notes and I'll send it to you afterwards because I can't remember her name off the top of my head. But yeah, every single day when she finishes school or finishes work, she's just like, we're gonna go do something fun to feel alive again. And like every day it's something different. And I'm like, she makes you realize how doesn't have to cost a lot of money. That time for yourself makes such a huge difference, and like how flexible it can be and what it can look like. And so, yeah, I'll send that to you afterwards. I love it.
Yeah, I feel like the like even just thinking about, I ask them like people what they do, and it's like I wake up, I go to work, I come home, I eat dinner, I sit on the couch, I watch TV, I go to sleep, I wake up, I go to work. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like, throw something else in there, right? Just like, have a little like, but like again, everyone's different. Like maybe you don't want to go out to, maybe you enjoy like whatever that looks like, but like maybe it's as simple as like buying a new candle and like lighting that before you watch TV, right? Like something that sparks a little different. You know what I mean? I don't know, but it's hard to sit here and be like, I never want to tell someone go on a walk or do this because, you know, everyone's different. But at the same time, you kind of have to find like what gets you out of that like vicious cycle.
Well, and it goes back to what you were saying about crafting a dream life and not necessarily a dream job, and that you can still do elements of that even during stressful times like job hunting.
Exactly.
So one of the things I have found so valuable about your Instagram is that there's just these, whether you call it myth busting in some cases or ha aha moments, I find myself looking at so many of these going, I didn't know I could do that. And like, so I was hoping maybe we could go through a couple of them and you could expand on them. And obviously, we'll send people to your Instagram to check it out. But one of the things that you said you can do is changing your job titles on resumes to match the role you're applying for. And I was like, it never occurred to me you could do this. Tell me more.
Okay. And I get a lot of pushback on this on my comments, like, oh, like you're lying and this and that. I'm like, I'm not saying, you know, call yourself a salesperson when you work in HR, you know, 100%,
Totally.
right? There's no point in that because your responsibilities, once you look at the actual responsibilities on your resume, aren't going to match. But what I am saying is when a job calls something, something else, and you have a different title, you can change your title to match theirs because you're going to do better in their applicant tracking system. You're going to do better if someone's looking at your resume. Because the first thing that we're trained to do as recruiters is this person in the same job title that we're applying for? Or are they in one that's, you know, going to be the next step? So if you're like in an account management position, but the job is called sales executive, but it's the exact same job descriptions, just change it to sales executive, like just match it, you know? And I think people are always like, well, am I supposed to be changing every single resume? Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think tailoring your resume, taking that extra 5 minutes just to tailor maybe the job title or maybe the first few bullet points. That's really what only anyone actually looks at, just to kind of match those things. The other thing I will say is you can leave your job title, right? So let's say, let's just use the account manager, right? You can leave that. But let's say that the job specifically wants you to work with like national accounts or something specific. Just put like a comma in your title or parentheses next to it that then says national accounts. So you haven't necessarily changed your actual title to sales executive of national accounts. It just says account manager, comma, national accounts. So it just is like more succinct with what they're looking for. And that's really what I'm talking about. Now the hard part here is, okay, do I match it to my LinkedIn? Do I change my LinkedIn every time? No, because you're not changing the responsibilities of your role. And if they go to your LinkedIn and see like, this says account manager, but she put sales executive on her resume, doesn't matter. Like everyone understands that's a very similar position. Worst case scenario, you get asked about it in an interview and you say, yeah, I wanted to tailor my resume to the job, of course, you know, and here's my responsibilities and here's why I'm a good fit. It's, you know, the exact same thing. So it's worked wonderfully for many of my clients. They're like, as soon as I change that, like many people, which is so frustrating, are in roles and have titles that don't have anything to do with what they're literally doing. And it's so frustrating because they're like, people look at my resume and they're not really seeing who I am.
I get screened out, right?
Yeah. Like my job title doesn't match my actual responsibilities. I'm like, then change it, like change it. And if they call HR and like, there's so, you know, whatever, right? If they say, oh no, like in your background, it says your title is this. And you can just be very honest and say, yeah, and it doesn't match my responsibilities. So I think it was like more, it made more sense to be more succinct in my resume. So people knew really like the type of job I have.
And it's, and if you think of over like 10 years or whatnot, how those titles just change in industries as well, right? Like the industry that I work in a lot now is called social impact, that like 10, 13 years ago when I started was called community investment or social investment. And so, yeah, I've had to do the same thing of tailoring it to what we call it now so that I don't get screened out of processes.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
You also talk a lot about having a one-page resume. And I think for a lot of people, myself included, you go, how do I fit? What? How do I fit it all? What's important? Where do I focus? Like, tell me more.
Yeah. And this is, again, one of those controversial things. You know, I will say, you know, there's exceptions to the rule. People in like education, it's very common to have a larger, you know, resume and you have to put your publications on there and a lot of things. So people in government, it's very, very common to have like really long, you know, sometimes 3-4 pages. I don't know why, like, especially in the US, like government is such a weird process. So we're just gonna, you know, put that to the side. But in terms of like private, public, corporate roles, every single hiring manager I've ever spoken to, every single recruiter I've ever spoken to, they're like, I don't want to look at a resume. Like the only reason I'm looking is because I just got to make sure that they're a fit. I don't want to sit there and like go through all of their responsibilities. Right. I want to look at what's their job title? How long were they there? Are they job hopping? Are they not? If they are, what's the reason? You know, what are their main responsibilities? And the most important thing is what are they currently working on? Because if you did something 10 years ago that is similar to the role, nobody cares because you've done so many things since then. You've been out of the game. There's so many, like the way that tech works now, things are changing so quickly. So it really doesn't matter. Everyone that I work with, they're like, wait, I really want to put this on here from like 2008 because it actually does have to do with the role. And I'm like, even if it does, it's okay. Like nobody cares. So your most recent and relevant information is the most important. If that doesn't relate to the job, you can put a section up at the top of your resume that says like career highlights, and then you can pull from things that were a little bit longer ago, but still put them in that career highlights. So they see like you have that experience. So it's still like on that front page of the resume. And then, you know, they say, you know, you only need 10 years is like the point. Mm-hmm. I will say, depending on how long you've been in each job, let's say, you know, you've been at your last job for 10 years, then maybe you do want to put that other job just to show there's been like other things you've been doing. But if you've been at, let's say, 5 different jobs over the past 10 years, you know, it's like, let's talk about which ones are the most relevant to the position. And then you kind of like use it that way. But really getting it to one page isn't hard. It's just having your skills on there, having the key highlights, and then having your last, I would say, again, depends on how long you're at each job, but the last 3 positions would probably be like a good rule of thumb. Those are the most important. Now, if you've only been in these roles for 1 year, you know, you probably need to show a little bit more, right? But the point being is like all the other things to show that you were still in the job market, you can just put other relevant experience and just list those jobs. You don't need to have bullet points for all those jobs that were, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And that's how you can keep it to that one page. And then, you know, it's really like if they ask questions, then that's your opportunity to speak more about it in the interview. But yeah, I think I don't want to sit here and say like, don't have 2 pages because that stresses people out. It's totally okay.
2-page version, 1-page version.
Yeah. Have both. I call it a 1-pager. I love people to have a 1-pager because if I ask someone for their resume, because I want to like look at it and send it somewhere, I don't want it to be super long. Like I want it to be a 1-pager that just kind of like screenshots and highlights like who they are and what their like specific skills are. If they're applying to jobs, it's going through an ATS system, which is the applicant tracking. It's going to get parsed anyways into the system. So if you have more than 1 page, it's okay. Right. But if you're giving it to someone to say, hey, like, here's a PDF, like 1-pager, like, please send this to whoever, you know, like, yeah, that's a much better way of doing things. So I would just say like, have both if you're kind of like stressed over that.
You know, it's funny because years ago I went to a talk given by the person that led the marketing and communications for the London Olympics. And I remember she shared with us, she's like, this is the strategy we used and it fit onto 1 page. And she was just like, I believe that if we couldn't fit our strategy onto 1 page, then it wasn't clear, it wasn't concise, we weren't getting our point across.
Yeah, that's
the strategy for such a massive event. Yeah. And it's like, and yet we think, and it's because it's personal, right? We're like, but it makes so much sense. So I love that. And I will try and implement it in the future because I've never done that before, right?
Yeah. I've seen recent graduates with 2-page resumes. I'm like, what have you done? Like, how do you have 2 pages?
Yeah, because I had to fit it in there. I made it. Yeah. You were talking there about describing gaps in the resume or why you're job hopping. I totally understand. I guess the piece that I struggle with is how is it perceived when there are gaps based due to layoffs? Because I think a lot of people worry that the layoff is going to be perceived as I was one of the lower performers and I was therefore let go. But how are recruiters and hiring managers seeing that?
So you can also put on there laid off due to a reduction in force, laid off due to COVID, laid off, you put the reason. If in fact the reason was that you were a bottom performer, then yeah, leave that off. Yeah, layoffs are very, very common nowadays. I feel like 5, maybe 10 years ago, it was kind of like, why are you getting laid off? Right. It's kind of like concerning. It's so common. Okay. I see it on like 1 of every 5. It's very, very common. So like, definitely if anyone's listening that has been laid off, like it's normal, put it on your resume. I'd much rather see that there was a layoff versus like, why is this person only in this job for 6 months or only in this job for a year? Immediately, if I see like in parentheses next to the dates, like laid off, I'm like, oh, okay. Like that's why, you know, it wasn't their decision to just like quit and, you know, bounce. So completely fine. All the hiring managers are like, man, it's so nice when people put like why they've job hopped, like if the company dissolved, if the company was acquired, if there's so many reasons, like there was a restructuring, right? Like so many different things as to why you'd be leaving a job. And that way you don't immediately get screened out. There's like a reason there. And then that red flag is now gone from the hiring manager's mind and you can move forward. So
yeah,
I recommend.
I love that. Cause it's just getting over the internal fear of shame and judgment, right? No, that's so helpful. The last one I wanted to talk about was you were talking about how to use ChatGPT to generate interview questions. Now, I actually sent this week that video of yours to a friend who is interviewing for jobs. She did that, and one of those questions came up in her interview. So for those that don't know the video, you're essentially saying copy and paste the job description, put it into ChatGPT, and ask for like 10 interview questions for this job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, that's what hiring managers are doing?
Yes. So here's the exact prompt you'll say. You write into ChatGPT and say, I am going to paste a job description here. Can you please generate 10 interview questions that you would ask if you were interviewing a candidate? So you want to get, anytime you prompt ChatGPT, be overly, overly specific. That always helps. You can always tailor, you know, the questions and the prompts, but like be as specific as possible. Then it'll say to you, yes, like paste it in, whatever. So then you paste it in. Then you get those questions. Then you then take those questions and say, based on these questions, I'm going to paste my personal resume. Using this resume, how would you answer these questions as a candidate? So now you have the questions and you have the answers. And again, this is a computer, this is AI, right? So this isn't like the Holy Grail, but it's a great way to like think of ideas or how to structure your answers, but make sure you look over them, right? And make sure that they're tailored to you and you're still going to like make it personal. I want to make that very clear, but it's such a great helpful tool. And now you have something to help you prep, something to kind of spark ideas for you on how to answer these questions.
Does it then help to have the 2-page version of the resume for this exercise? So yeah, it's got more to work with.
Yeah. More information. Yeah. More information, the better. Or you can ask it like, how would you structure an answer to this question if you were a whatever, plug in your job title, right? And then it just gives you more of a generic way to structure it. And then you put in your information there. And that way you can just like at least have kind of a template on how to answer the questions.
Yeah. I love it because it's ChatGPT is not something I've used a lot of in the past. And so, you know, going through this process with a friend, I was like, whoa, like,
yeah.
Anyways, blew my mind.
It's amazing. I mean, that's how people write resumes now. It's like so easy. Like, and you can get so specific with, can you just rewrite this one bullet point, make it specific to like achievements and showing my success and like copy and paste the bullet point that you've maybe had a hard time structuring. And you're like, wow, that was so easy. Like it just perfect. Right. So yeah, it's great.
I guess tailoring it to specific job descriptions as well.
Mm-hmm.
Possibilities are endless here. I love it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So we've talked a lot about job hunting for those looking to go to a new organization. But I think for a lot of people, maybe they have at least the piece of clarity that the organization they're in is one that they like, but their current role isn't a great fit. And I think what I see for a lot of folks is that fear of how to delicately job hunt and look for a different opportunity within their organization, especially if they don't have a supportive manager. So what's your take on those internal job hunting and how to make it successful?
I love when people, it depends how large is your corporation, right? But if you can find some sort of mentor or someone that has been there and obviously has moved positions, I would reach out to them, like whether it's internally, like with a Slack message or email, and just say like, hey, like I'm really looking to grow at this company, like just kind of frame it in that sense. I'd love to talk to you about like how you've moved into this division or something like that. So create those relationships first and kind of use that to help you mentor. Obviously the best case scenario is you do have a supportive manager and you can talk to them about like the growth that you want and what that looks like. And start to ask them like what opportunities that you could go into or different divisions that would make sense. If you don't have that supportive manager, I think you have to look elsewhere. And unfortunately, like you may just need to reach out to the hiring teams for those different divisions. It can get a little bit awkward if you just apply internally, like to an open rec without your manager knowing. I've seen that kind of like go a little bit badly. So I just want to kind of make people cautious of that. Although that conversation can be difficult, I used to be a hiring manager, from that perspective, I can see when people are applying to internal positions. And if I'm like, yo, like, why didn't you talk to me about this? Right. It's a little bit, eh. So I would say, even if you don't have that support, it's still probably smart to say, and maybe you come at it from that standpoint of like, I really want to grow. Like, can we start having kind of like a monthly meeting of like talking about like what my next steps would be. And even if it's making them feel like it's still on their team, but at least you're kind of like, at least putting that little bug in their head that like, hey, I'm really wanting to like, you know, kind of go and make a name for myself here. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the best case scenario is like mentorship of some sort, whether it comes from your personal manager or a manager from a different division. That's probably the best case scenario.
And there's an element of like personal branding there as well, right? Of like helping people understand what you do and what skills you have and the value that you can bring to the table, because they may not seem transferable. And yet in so many cases they are, right?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is too, is like at companies, it's so expensive to lose somebody, like a good employee, to lose them and then have to bring in a new one and train them. It's very expensive. So before you quit, before you get to that level of like, I'm just going to rage quit, I'm so not happy, right? It is really smart. And maybe you have to go to HR, maybe you have to go to the manager that's above your manager, right? Confidentially. Mm-hmm. And say, hey, like, I'm kind of getting to a place of like, I'm feeling burnt out. I love the company. I don't necessarily want to leave the company. Like, can we talk about like other divisions or positions I can be in that match a little bit more of my strengths, because mm-hmm. this isn't working, right? And they, I would say, I'm going to say typically, it's not always, typically really do want to retain and keep employees, because again, if we go back to the money thing, it's cheaper to mm-hmm. keep than it is to find someone else. So they'd rather move you into a different role. I mean, I remember leaving my first position. I didn't know these things. And I just went into my boss and was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I got to quit. Can't do it. And he was like, well, let's talk about like what, you know, he was a great manager. So he was like, let's talk about like what would make you happy. And like, I have this open position in this other division. Like, why don't we move you there? Like, they want to try and like figure out a better fit, right? It doesn't always work, but it's something to at least think about and like have those conversations first before you get to that point of like rage quitting.
Yeah. And for those that maybe didn't rage quit, that left an organization, what's your perspective on going back to a previous organization? Like, how is that received by hiring managers?
I love it. I'm all about it. Yeah. I mean, they call it a boomerang. Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, every situation's different. Like, why not? I mean, I always bring this stuff back to dating because I think it's just so, it makes so much sense. It's like, if you had a relationship and you were young and you didn't know any better, you left, like you wanted to experience something else. And you're like, man, like, I really think like this person and I have like changed as people, but like, we still have the same morals and same values, and let's like reconnect and see where that goes. And sometimes those are some of the most beautiful relationships that have spent some time apart and reconnect, right? Why can't that be the same for a job? And maybe you left because of a terrible manager and that manager's gone. So why not come back and say, hey, like, I'm really wanting to be on this team for these reasons. Like, unfortunately I had a really like tough experience with this style of leadership. Like, can I talk to you about how the leadership is now? And like, what does that look like? Right. So just knowing the reasons why you left and making sure that you don't put yourself in that position again, but definitely like, no, I think people have a little bit of like shame or like pride to go back to a company. Heck no. Like, if it's the best opportunity for you, that's the most important. Like, put yourself first, you know, and like, that's really what matters. And a lot of times, yeah, it works out great. And sometimes, I mean, I don't know if people know this, but Amazon is like the most well-known place for boomerangs. It's like the term was created there. They don't give their employees enough like base on the base side of things, salary compensation as they move up. So many of those employees will leave, go get a higher base and higher salary, and then come back and say, hey, like, well, I'm at this salary now, so you have to bring me back in at this. And it works for them, you know? So they just do what's best for them. But I think at the end of the day, don't let pride get in the way of like what's going to make you ultimately happy about what your job's going to be.
Well, and so much of it goes back to breaking down preconceptions, right? It's I think, fear for a lot of people and making assumptions of what the other party is thinking, whether it's about your resume or why you left or why you're coming back. And like, I think if you can have that open to a degree conversation about, you know, you don't want to lay everything out there, but, you know, open conversation about what you need, what you're looking for. And, you know, ultimately it's two people coming together and seeing if it's a good fit, the dating analogy, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Before we kind of wrap it up, is there any like last thing we'll definitely obviously encourage people to check out your website and your Instagram, but is there one last thing where you're like, I wish more job hunters knew this, did this, tried this?
Oh, where to start? I know. I think I'm such an big advocate for LinkedIn. Not a huge advocate for having to pay for LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that, but I am saying it's a great, great, great social network in terms of you can speak to someone on that platform that you would have never had the ability to contact. Like, how would you have found their information? Right. And they're just there. Like, that is a hiring manager. You can directly message them without having to pay for anything, send them a connection request, press add note and say, hey, I'm really interested in this role. It does go a long way. I mean, a lot of people won't respond to you, but I always tell people when I, as a recruiter, I have so many applicants for jobs. When I see someone that messages me and they say, hey, I applied to this job, I'm really excited. Like, I don't want a huge long paragraph. I just want that little extra of like, I'm excited about this because, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm probably not going to respond to you, but I'm going to look at your name. Let's just say like Anna Smith, whatever. I'm going to go to my ATS. I'm going to control find. I'm going to put in Anna Smith because I have hundreds of applicants. If Anna Smith's a good fit, this makes my life so easy, right? So I look, see if she's a good fit. If she's not, then I just, well, whatever, right? But if she is, like, this person just gave themselves such a better opportunity to get seen versus not. So it's like, that's where that expectation is. I will say, so like in terms of things that you can do, right? Like I label, when you're job searching, label your jobs like red light, green light, yellow light. So like red would be like, probably not a good fit. Like, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I still want to apply. Yellow is kind of like a stretch goal. Like maybe I am, maybe I'm not, but anything green light, that's like, I know I'm such a fit. I have all the requirements. Like everything makes sense. Take that little bit of extra time to send that extra message to make sure that you get seen.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting because so many of us hesitate that cold connection. So even just what you're saying, I'm excited because like templates up the wazoo. And that, for those listening that don't know, you have some great templates on your website that people can, there's some freebies and some online courses that people can access to really just break down this process and make it so much easier. I think sometimes too much information, like that plethora of information, becomes overwhelming for us, but you've really broken down a lot of these things in step-by-step, try this format, which takes some of that decision fatigue away from people in the job hunting process. So make sure you check it out, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much.
So the last question is, as a busy entrepreneur yourself with a thriving business, what are you personally doing to manage your well-being or any folks that you might subcontract to or that kind of thing?
Yeah, I'm such a big believer in, I'm like the woo-woo kind of girl. So I'm such a believer in like the mindfulness stuff. I took up meditation, I would say probably like seriously, like a year or so ago. And I go in and out of it. It's definitely hard, but it's definitely something that I've seen like change me and my business, even just like 10 minutes a day. And I have to do guided because my little brain will just kind of float whatever. But yeah, I've been doing guided meditations that have helped me so much. I also have this thing on my background, like I literally am pulling up my phone right now, and it's like little reminders of like things that you can do throughout your day to just kind of like help you. And like this one's like, create an alter ego, like channeling your greatest identity, like let having fun be your compass. You know, occasionally rent the supercar that's going to help you, like, you know, taste that future that you want, like just things that kind of like, I don't know, get me excited. And so these types of things, like, one of my favorite ones was like, do something for like, I think it was like 18 minutes a day. That's going to make you the top 1% in the world. Like, what is that to you? Like, to me, it's like reading so hard for me. Like my focus is not always there. And so I have this book on my desk and I'm like, when I have this like time, I have a little highlighter and I go through it and I'm just like, okay, if I spend some time and like bring myself this information, like read and like highlight this thing. I know that sounds so simple, but it's like, to me, that's like really something that like changes and helps me. So again, that was probably a long answer for what you asked, but yeah, those are some things that I do.
Well, and it goes back to like, I'm sure that helps you stay grounded and focused, right? That clarity piece coming back into it. So I love it.
Definitely.
Well, thank you so much, Darcy, for your time. There's so many incredible tidbits. I highly recommend people check out your website and your Instagram. I know every video I'm like, a new piece of information I had not considered or a perspective. So thank you for all that you put out into the world.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Thank you so much to Darcy for joining me on the podcast today. I just want to say, if you loved this interview as much as I do, please make sure to share it with a friend. I also want you to make sure to follow Darcy on Instagram at @careercoachdarcy. And I've linked in today's show notes to her coaching website, how you can connect with her on LinkedIn, as well as Rockland, Darcy's recruitment firm. Remember, if you are in the middle of that job hunting process, I know how painful and frustrating it can be. I hope that you've taken away some tips from today. Feel free to tag myself and Darcy on Instagram with any of those aha moments and how you might apply them to your job hunt going forward. I wish you all the best in that process. Keep your spirits up, and I hope you find the role that is perfect for you. Until next week, when we're going to be joined on the podcast by Denise Lloyd to talk all about that dreaded engagement survey that your organization sends out and how to make the most of it. So I cannot wait to connect with you next week. Have a fantastic one and talk soon.